So this is 455 on September 30th.
So lambda prime is what the network actually sees as far as traffic being sent by the sender. Does everybody see that? And it's greater than lambda prime is greater than or equal to lambda, of course, because it includes everything that's in lambda as well as the retransmitted data. And I think we've decided that red works better for notes, right? So, the point here just being that when you don't do congestion control right, the retransmission effects of the reliable protocol drive you into worse and worse states, right? Because the worse it gets, the more dropped packets there are, the more timeouts occur, the more retransmissions occur, and so the rate goes up and things get miserable. Okay, so you'll want to take a look at these graphs in the book. The thing that I wanted to say about these graphs is that they look like there's sort of something deep going on, but there isn't, right? They're just an example of what happens, and therefore I don't like them very much. But let's explain. When things are working well, lambda prime increases to say half the available bandwidth. This is in the assuming case. This is assuming the case that we have two senders going at once over the same path somewhere, so that there is possible. There's possible for there to be congestion. The perfect case is that as you increase the sending rate, the successful data is equal to what you sent. That's all well and good. Here's what I don't like. This says R over 2 here, and this says R over 3. And somehow this gives the impression, perhaps, that as you increase the sending rate to R over 2, in some case necessarily the rate, the successful rate goes to R over 3. That's not what they're saying here. They're just saying that it may be that you get behavior like that. Okay? Okay. And similarly for that picture. They're just examples, so don't hone in too much on the fact that it says R over 2, R over 3, R over 2, R over 4. It's just being silly. Okay, so the other possibility, I don't know why we need four senders here. We can do it with two. The other possibility occurs when we look at traffic that involves multiple paths and different senders. So let's go through this example. We've got a sender A here sending over to C, and his data is going over this path, the red path. And then we've got another sender. So this is A to C. This is D to B. We've got another sender going over this path. Okay? And the important thing to do is look here at this common router between the two. And assume that the available bandwidth here is much less than the available bandwidth here. Okay. So now here's what's going to go on. We're going to have some amount of traffic going through here. Let's assume we have a lot of traffic going through here because we've got a nice high bandwidth link here. Even a high bandwidth link all the way over to here, it doesn't really matter. Yeah, sure it does. We have a nice high bandwidth link set, or path, I should say, all the way over to here. So from D to B, we can send a lot of traffic. Right? Nice high bandwidth path. This is not such a high bandwidth path. And because it's limited by this initial part here, and consider what happens. As we try to send more and more traffic over the D to B path, we start to fill up some buffers. Right? We're trying to go faster than we can. We fill up the buffer. What happens when we send a packet? We have a new slot available in the buffer. But who's going to get that slot? The guy who's trying harder, D. And so the guy A, who's limited by this lower bandwidth link here, getting to here, sort of loses out. His packets typically arrive here to find the buffer full because this guy always wins. So just another example of what congestion can do to you. And so in that scenario, depending on how A behaves and how B behaves, the behavior that A may see here is that when he increases his sending rate, it goes up for a while, but eventually it tails off. The harder he tries, the slower he goes. The hurrier I go, the behinder I get, was my dad's favorite saying about that. So trying hard doesn't help you, and what's going on? You're wasting all that effort, that all the bandwidth associated with those paths, with those packets that you're trying to send that aren't getting delivered. Okay. So there are two prime approaches to doing congestion control. One is end-to-end, and this is the version that's implemented in TCP and used by the internet. In this one, there's really nothing that the network layer itself provides almost no help for this. All that happens is TCP sees missing packets, it sees dropped packets, and from that infers that there's congestion and then responds with its congestion control mechanisms. The other way of doing it, the network itself, the routers in the network say, ooh, I'm getting congested, I better provide some feedback to the sender to tell them to slow down. And there are a couple ways of doing that. One just requires a single bit reserved in every packet, and this is used in some forms of the ATM networks, which we haven't really talked about. An earlier network called the DEC bit network used it. TCP IP can use an option. Remember, TCP has all those option fields. You can set an option saying, I want to use explicit congestion notifications, although that requires the routers to actually do something at the transport layer, which they're not really supposed to do. But a strict layering viewpoint says don't do that. And then finally, the network can provide indications to the senders explicitly saying you should be sending at no more than this rate. So this one is kind of similar to this. The network explicitly says I'm getting congested as opposed to dropping a packet. And the sender has to figure out what to do based on that information. The other one is the network says, here's your rate. So, ATM.
This is a kind of networking of asynchronous transfer mode,
which doesn't actually mean a whole lot except to telephone company engineers. This is a networking technology that was essentially designed by the telephone companies to carry voice and data traffic. And these days, it's used a lot in the IP network backbones, but almost never revealed to end customers, except large institutions. Anyway, ABR stands for Available Bit Rate, and essentially what it is a best effort service. Over ATM. ATM was designed primarily for fixed rate services. That is, in order to carry a telephone conversation, they think you need a certain number of bits per second, and so when you set up the connection, it reserves that number of bits per second for the telephone conversation. But if you want to do IP-like networking over ATM, then best effort service is the best match to the IP service model. Okay, so the idea here is that, sort of like over the internet, senders should use the available bandwidth, and if it gets congested, they should slow down. Okay, that's just the idea. And the way it gets implemented is that amongst the data traffic, there are what are called resource management cells or packets. Think of them as packets that get sent as well, and they're just very small packets. They're about 50 bytes, I think. And what happens is that there's the picture on the next slide. What happens is that the source of the data sends normal data cells as well as resource management cells through the network, and as they reach the destination, they come back. They get sent back to the sender back through the network, and so these red cells, the resource management cells, provide an explicit feedback path that goes through the whole network all the way around, and they just sort of circulate at a low rate in amongst the data. And the switches have the opportunity to set a couple of bits in those resource management cells. There's a bit that says there are two bits. There's a bit that says, I'm mildly congested. That is, don't go any faster than you're going now. And there's a bit that says, you're going too fast. Congestion indication. And so when the red cells pass through the switches, if the switch says, I'm congested, it can set one or the other of those two bits. It can also, and so you have a couple of possibilities here. One is you can design it so that the switch actually changes the rate in the resource management cell, or it can change the bit and have somebody at the end sort of interpret the bit. Okay? So that's an explicit feedback mechanism where the network is sort of monitoring congestion explicitly and using the data that's flowing through it to feed back the information to the sender about go faster, go slower. Okay? Needless to say, that's not how IP works. And in IP, congestion control is delegated to GCP. So, in particular, UDP flows, that is, if you're sending a lot of data from one, from a particular source to a destination, UDP doesn't pay any attention to congestion control at all. It just has no such mechanism in it, and therefore it can be an actually a bad citizen in the IP world by sort of trying to go so fast that it causes lots of congestion and never notices. But mostly we do TCP and mostly we get away with it. So, now, this is sort of the watchword for congestion control in TCP. It says, we want to go as fast as we can. The only way we can figure out how fast that is to keep trying going faster and faster until it doesn't work anymore. Okay? Because there's nothing else in the network that will tell us. So we just have to keep going faster until something indicates that we're going too fast, and then we have to slow down. And the key sort of theoretical result here is that this only works if you only slowly increase your sending rate and you rapidly decrease your sending rate. So the behavior that you'll see in terms of sending rates is over time, a TCP connection starts out and it starts sending and it goes faster and faster until something happens, typically a lost packet or a timeout, which causes it to rapidly drop its sending rate to about half of what it was going. And then it goes, slowly increases in. Okay, so you get a sawtooth like that. Now, on this slide, the label here is congestion window size. I don't think everybody can see that. And I was talking as if it was the sending rate. All right? The congestion window size is the implementation of sending rate in TCP. And so let's think about what the congestion window is to begin with. Remember, we had before the receiver window. Right? What was the purpose of the receiver window?
Not to overflow the receiver's buffer,
right? So the receiver said, I have this much space available. You, sender, can send up to that much data and without getting an acknowledgement. The congestion window is a similar idea, but now it's governed by the congestion control algorithm instead of the flow control algorithm. And the way it works is that the congestion window increases by one, maximum segment size, whatever that is, whatever number that is, probably somewhere between 500 and 1500 bytes for usual networks, every time an ACK is received, essentially every round trip time. And it just keeps doing that until a loss is detected. When that loss is detected, the congestion window shrinks to half its size, and therefore the sender will stop sending, right? It will slow down. And then it will, from that point on, it will go more slowly. And the thing that's different about the congestion window as opposed to the receiver window is that it, you know, usually it's the case that with the receiver window, let me back off from that. The thing that's the same about the congestion window and the receiver window is if either one of those windows is full, when do you send another packet? What is the event that occurs in a sender that allows you to send another packet if either of those windows is full? Not clear. Well, think about it. So if the windows are full, if either of the windows is full, you're not allowed to send, right? So what occurs that allows you to send the next packet? Pardon? Can't hear.
They move on to the next packet.
Okay, so what event occurs? What networking event occurs that allows that to happen? An ACK arrives, right? The thing that triggers the window to move to allow you to send the next packet is the arrival of an ACK. All right? And so when the window is growing like this, when an ACK arrives, you essentially get to send two more packets, right? Because you get one because the ACK opened up one, and you get an extra one because we added one to the window size. So you get to send two there. When congestion occurs, you reduce the window size. Now you have to stop for a while. Right, because you're sort of way beyond where your current where the congestion window says you should be, except that you've still got a lot of ACKs outstanding, and so as they come in, you'll be able to increase the window size again and start eventually sending again. All right, but the key thing to remember, is that arrival of an ACK that triggers all the changes in this window and changes the ability to send another packet. Okay, so the algorithmic step then is for the TCP connection, you keep track of the last byte sent and the last byte ACKed, and you make sure that that's less than or equal to the congestion window. Remember, you also check to make sure that it's less than or equal to the receive window. You can't go faster than either one of those will let you go. And so the rate that you're going is roughly equal to the congestion window over the round trip time bytes per second. If you think about it in terms of the ACKs arriving. Okay, so let's go backwards one. So how does the sender detect a congestion event? That's either a loss detected by that is, a loss detected by either a timeout, or remember we had that three duplicate ACKs rule that we had before that said that we used for fast retransmit. So either one of those is interpreted as a loss, and a loss is taken to mean congestion. Okay, so we reduce the congestion window. So there are three things that we're going to look at then in the TCP congestion control mechanism. We've already seen additive increase, multiplicative decrease. There's a mechanism called slow start that we have to talk about and why we need it, and then we'll talk about how timeout events get handled. So, one of the things that is never very apparent to people is why this mechanism is called slow start. Because it actually starts out being an exponential increase in the size of the window at the beginning of a TCP connection. It's called slow start because it's slow relative to the original way of doing things, which was to let the sender fill up the receive window immediately. All right. So in the original TCP definition, you set up this TCP connection, the receiver gives you a receive window, and the sender blasts out that many bytes. Okay? Well, this mechanism is slow relative to that, but it's going to be faster than the additive increases that we use later. So, we start out with one a congestion window equal to one maximum segment size, and so as we get so maximum 5 bytes round trip time is 200 milliseconds. Right, so you go 20 kilobits per second because you wait one round trip time to send each packet. So you send 500 bytes, and you wait a round trip time, which is a fifth of a second, and you send 500 bytes, round trip time is 200 milliseconds. Send I get 2.5 kilobits per second. Oh, bytes. All right. Yes, all right. Bits and bytes. That's what's troubling me here. 2.5 kilobytes per second is 20 kilobits per second. Good. All right. So that's the initial rate. But the capacity of the path may be much greater than that, so we want to quickly get up there. So the way it works is you double the congestion window size every round trip time initially. Does it say that on this next slide? Yeah, that's what it says. Double the congestion window every round trip time. Which means, again, every time an ACK is received, and so it builds up really fast. Okay? Until a loss event occurs, at which time you cut the congestion window in half, and then grow it by one every time an ACK is received. Okay, so that's the sawtooth. So the behavior we're going to get is going to look like this. It's going to cut in half, and then it's going to grow linearly, get cut in half. Okay, so we'll see a behavior like this. This is the slow start phase. This is the additive increase phase, and this is the multiplicative decrease. Okay. So it gets
sort of more subtle as
the years go by.
So
this was
the first design,
and
that's good.
But then
people
realized
it could be
improved
further.
If
the loss
event
is
three
duplicate
acts,
we
just
do
the
multiplicative
decrease.
Right?
If
the
loss
event
is
a timeout, somehow
with
the fast
retransmit
algorithm
in place,
a timeout
indicates
that
something
is more seriously
wrong.
In
that case,
we go back
and
treat it
as
if we were
at the
beginning.
We
go all
the
way
back to
one
maximum
segment size
as
the
congestion
window
and
do a
fast
start
algorithm
again
to
get
going.
Oh,
okay,
well,
all right,
so
they
draw
a picture
too.
Ah,
but
then
we have
the
question
of,
all right,
so
we start
out,
we
are
doing
the
slow
start
exponential
increase
stuff.
At
some point,
we'd
be better
off
if
we
slowed
down
that increase
and
switched
to
additive increase.
And
so there's
a little
bit
of memory
in here
that
keeps
track
of
the
previous
value
of
the
window
size
and
switches
to
additive
increase
when
we
reach
half
that.
Okay,
so
which
is
sort of
where
you
would start
from
if
you
went
all
the
way
back
up
to
the,
if
you
went
all
the
way
back up
to
the
previous
window
and
then
suffered
an
event
and
went
back
down
to half.
Well,
instead
of
doing
that,
we
just
recognize
that we
need
to
start
at half
and
go
up
from there.
Okay?
So
this
threshold
is another
bit
of
state
variable
that's kept
in
the
that's
kept
in the
TCP
connection.
But,
you know,
the thing that
I
really
want
you
to
get
here
is
the
set
of
mechanisms
that's
involved.
Right?
There's
slow
start
and
what
that
means.
There's
additive
increase
and
multiplicative
decrease
and
what
that
means.
And
how they
work
together
is
this
idea
of
the
threshold
that
switches
you
from
slow
start
to
additive
increase
at
some
point.
All
right.
Let
me
stop and
see if
there
are questions.
Let me
turn
on
a
light.
Let's
see.
Any
thoughts
about
this?
So
I get,
yeah?
No?
this is
really
subtle
stuff,
the
design
of this.
I mean,
I think
that's
the
other
thing
to
appreciate
about
it, is that
you
know,
when
the
ARPANET
was
invented
in
the
late
1970s
and
then
the
internet
in
the
80s,
people
didn't
know
this
stuff.
Right?
They
didn't
know
how
this
was,
what
the
effects
of congestion
were going
to be,
and
they
didn't
know
how
to
design,
they
didn't
know
how
to
design
behaviors
of the
senders
to
avoid
congestion
and
to
limit
congestion.
And
it took
some
really
bright
people
who
knew
sort of
control
theory.
This
is really
a control
theory
problem,
a
feedback
problem,
how to
detect
congestion
and
how
to
appropriately
respond
to
it
to
optimize
the
overall
use
of the network.
So
it's
not,
you know,
I would not have
ever
thought
of this.
Took
some
really
very
bright
people
who
dug
into
this
theoretically
and
experimentally to figure this stuff out. Okay, so this slide summarizes the behaviors, exponential growing, linear growth, triple-ack congestion, which takes us back to half the current window size, and we go from there, and finally restart the slow start stuff. So this slide, I think this is in the book, I'm not sure. It details the behaviors. So let's see if there's a way to sort of simply and easily capture the rules here. Intuitively. What's the intuition? Well, I think AIMD, remembering AIMD is key, right? Additive increase, multiple decrease, or just remembering that sawtooth wave, right? Both of those are really key. And then think about the use the transitions in that sawtooth wave, in that graph, to label your understanding of what it is that causes those transitions. I think that's the way that I best understand this stuff, rather than trying to memorize a bunch of code. Ultimately, if you ever have to implement this stuff, you'll want to go to that code and check it out. But for basic understanding, I don't know that it helps. Okay, so what's the average throughput in steady state? Essentially, you get about 3/4 of the available bandwidth because you sort of go back and forth between full bandwidth rate and half bandwidth rate, and you do a linear step in between, a linear path in between those two. So the average of those is half. The average of those is halfway in between. So halfway in between full rate and half rate is 3/4 rate. Quick way to understand. Does that make sense? Back to our square wave again. There's half the capacity. And so when we're in steady state, it's looking like this. And you say, where is it? What is this? This is the sending rate, and if I spend all of my time essentially on lines that look like that, then the average rate is going to be like that, halfway in between. Skip that slide. So the other test of a congestion control algorithm, we've sort of looked at it from the perspective of a single sender, right? What is the behavior of a single sender? Remember, the overall goal of the congestion algorithm is to provide some sort of balance in the network between different senders. And that can be said this way. If there are a number of TCP sessions all going over the same link, which has limited bandwidth, then each of them should get a proportional share of that available bandwidth. Right? So this is the goal, and the question is, does the TCP congestion control algorithm achieve that goal? And this is an interesting graph that illustrates why it is that, in fact, this property is achieved for two senders. And the labels here on the axes are the throughput of each of the two connections. So at any given time, connection 1 has a certain throughput, and connection 2 has a certain throughput, and that's represented by a point in this space. Okay? Now, the ideal point where everybody is going as fast as they can and they're equally sharing is here, at the intersection of this line, because this line is the capacity of the network. In this case, connection 2 is using all the capacity of the network. In this case, connection 1 is using all the capacity of the network. And at any point on this line, the total capacity of the network is being used. Okay? On the other hand, this 45-degree line represents the case that the two senders are using equal amounts of bandwidth. And this part out here doesn't count. You can't go there. Okay. You're bounded into this space. So help to change colors maybe for this. Yeah, not blue. Dark blue. Light blue. So suppose we're in some space here, and let's consider what happens if R2 is sending its fair share already. So R2 is somewhere up in here. R2.
You mean R
over 2? I don't mean R at all. This is tricky. No. Not what I want to do. So let's suppose that we... What I'm not seeing here, just a second. Okay. Yeah, let's suppose we start here. That's really what they want us to do, and I should just follow along. Moving along this red line, think about it. It means that both R1 and R2 are increasing their sending rates. Okay? Congestion occurs, and they both decrease their sending rates to half of what it was at this point. All right? And then they both increase their sending rates and decrease and increase and decrease. All right? And you can show mathematically that essentially what happens is that they will approach this line this diagonal line asymptotically. All right. And as we said before, they can't actually go any faster than that point right there, although their congestion windows may suggest that they can try. So what will happen is that they sort of settle into to operating right along that line, increasing their congestion windows, decreasing and increasing and decreasing, but always staying at the same rate. All right. So they'll converge to the same rate. Okay. That's not a proof, by the way, but it is some intuition about why that happens. Right? And if you start, you know, anywhere else, well, regardless of where you start, this same phenomenon occurs. That's the key thing. Yeah.
How does congestion 1 know to decrease more than congestion 2? When it's on the left side of the curve versus on the left. Because in order for it to have a sawtooth going towards the equilibrium.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the attempted rates anyway. I think it comes from this initial starting position. They will both increase along the 45-degree slope, right? Because that's the way it works. They're both increasing at the same rate. That's actually not quite true. The one that's sending faster will increase faster.
Okay. So then it'll also decrease.
So, that suggests that it won't converge. That's a very good question. Have to study that one some more. Maybe do a simulation or something to understand how that works. Okay. So next time we'll start chapter 4, network layer. Start to talk about routing and the like. I did. Thank you.
Okay. Good. Let me know if there's anything.
Yeah, I will send you the next. I'll send you the exam scores, and then I'm going to give another assignment here. The next one will be the programming assignment, and then there'll be one after that.
In the
pipeline. Okay. Thanks. I'm going to hit the lights.
Should we have more than one like pair or like values, or do you care about that? Because it's just string matching.
I don't care.
Okay, so if I just have one, it's fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just how interesting do you want to make it?
I mean, I don't.
You just want to get it done.
Well, no, it's something I got to work
on. Okay.
I'm thinking about saving it. If I want to have like all my keys saved somewhere, I don't want to have them like text files somewhere. Yeah, I mean, could be all
that stuff. Try to spread out a bit. I don't know that it's entirely possible, but...
All wrong. All.
mid as far as yeah.
Ridiculous. Oh,